All right, welcome to another edition of Transformations Through Running. Thank you for being here. Thank you for tuning in and being a part of our community that we're growing here. Today we're talking to, we're interviewing Noel Darcy, and we're talking about the death race. He actually finished the death race. A lot of people in the running world know exactly what this is, but he did it in 20 hours and 125 kilometers, running through the night in darkness. It was kind of crazy. A lot of people do this race as a relay, so they'll take four people and each person will run one leg of the race, and then you have, I would say, a small handful of individuals that actually set out to complete this run on by themselves. Many of them don't finish this race, but it's in the Rocky Mountains, but it's in Alberta. It's, the terrain is harsh. It gets cool in the evening regardless of what time of year. It's usually done in the summer though. But again, there's a lot of people that know much more about this race than I do, but I'm super grateful that I had the opportunity to sit down with Noel and hear about his experience, what it was like to run endless hours throughout the night in darkness. I couldn't even imagine, to be honest with you. Like, he's going to bring us there visually. He's going to talk about the challenges, the successes of getting through it, and then what it was like to finish, because it's such a mental and physical challenge. I almost feel like something like this is more mental than physical. At any rate, thank you so much for being here. Looking forward to you to sharing this show with you. This is Drew, and you're listening to Transformations Through Running.
Okay, Noel, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Drew. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So you just got through this death race. Now,
yes,
this death race was 125 kilometers that you completed in 20 hours.
Yes, that is correct.
How you feeling about that?
I'm feeling pretty accomplished. It's something I never, if you'd asked me 4 or 5 years ago, would I have ever done this? I would have said, no, you're nuts.
Now, tell me about, so this death race, this is something that, I was just looking at some of the statistics from last year, and it looked like a good majority of people that set out to do this race don't actually finish it. Would you have any, I would guess 75%, do you know?
This year, 120 of the 371 finished, so approximately.
Okay, so a third finished, so only 33%, so I was close.
It was, you were pretty close.
Okay, wow, that's crazy. So now, how do you feel being one of the less, what is that, 33% less than that was able to complete it? Does that mean something to you?
It means a lot to me, actually, yeah. There was times where I thought that I was going to be in that statistic that doesn't finish, but yeah, I was the happiest person ever to come over that finish line, so...
Well, you know what's funny is I saw a picture of you after the finish line, and you had this big smile on your face, and I got to tell you, if I were to finish 20 hours of straight running, I would be in the fetal position, hoping someone would carry me the rest of the way.
don't let that picture fool you. I was actually in a lot of pain, but I don't know, maybe I was just drugged up on salt tabs or something, but yeah, I was definitely hurting, but happy at the same time. So,
okay, so give our listeners a chance to understand what the death race is. Before I want to get back. After we talk about what the death race is, we'll go back and talk about you approaching me and beginning the training stage. But for those listeners like myself, before you approached me with this idea, I didn't know what the death race is. So maybe you could explain it a little bit.
Yeah, it's a race that began back in the year 2000, and it's in Grand Cache, just about 2 hours south of Grand Prairie. So from where I'm living in Olds, it's about a 6-hour drive. It kind of started out as a very grassroots, small town kind of race, but it has developed into one of the toughest trail races in Western Canada. It's 125 kilometers, summits three mountains along the way, 17,000 feet of elevation change, and yeah, it's considered an extreme race. A lot of people just do it on teams, and then there's a few nutty people that do it solo, such as myself. And I did it for the first time this year. And last year I ran on a team, and when I ran on the team last year, that's a few weeks later, that's kind of when I decided that, yeah, I was going to give it a shot on my own. So
there's, there were five legs of this race?
Five legs of the race. Yeah, they're all split up. The first leg is 19 kilometers. Second leg, I believe, is 27 kilometers. The third leg is 19 kilometers. These are approximate. I'm not entirely sure of the numbers, but the fourth leg, which is the longest leg, I believe, is about 38 kilometers. And then the final leg is somewhere around 23, 24 kilometers. So...
Okay, now when you what's going through your mind when you're like, hey, I'm gonna run this whole thing myself?
Honestly, I looked at it as something that probably a very small percentage of the world have ever done, and I kind of wanted to get myself into that small percentage. But at the same time, I had a lot of self doubt moving into it, and it's not all just straight running training. It's, you know, the strength training played a big part in it. But going back to what I was thinking, I was just looking at it as a bucket list accomplishment to say I've done it. And
I like how you said that there's doubt in your mind, because I like to talk about goals and setting and achieving. And for you to set set the bar so high for yourself. Now, when I think we don't always set goals properly, so many times we set a goal that we know we can accomplish, which I don't consider a goal. So then we procrastinate, we don't work as hard, and you're not putting as much effort in to this goal because you know you can accomplish anyway. So I always say, if it's a real goal, if you're really going to push yourself, there needs to be some kind of doubt in your mind. Of course, you have to believe in yourself, without a doubt. There's no way you would have made it through that race without believing in yourself, but there needs to be some doubt to push you forward to get to that next level. What was that doubt like training and then actually in the race?
Well, in training, when I'm training with other people, and if I'm having a bad day training, like running up a mountain, like for instance, I did a lot of my training out around the Bragg Creek area, like running up Moose Mountain and stuff like that. And I ran with people I also consider friends that I train with. And if I was having a bad day and they're having, they're like running way better than me and running ahead of me, I'm kind of thinking to myself, well, maybe I'm not ready, and I've had lots of moments like that in the last 6 months, where I've been just waking up in the morning and I'm like, I'm just drained of energy. I just don't think I can do this today. And I get out there and I do it. I feel good after I've got it done, but it can be quite miserable while you're doing it. I had lots of doubts,
So let's talk about your training schedule, because your training schedule was some of the most extreme types that I've been around. And I've been around professional athletes. I've been around Olympic athletes, Olympians. And, what you were doing, it was crazy. So just the extent, your long runs, and then we'll get into some of our training together in the gym. But what you were doing for your long runs, and then you have a full-time job. I mean, can you talk about, give our listeners a chance to understand what that's like, because I don't think everyone knows what it would be like to go through what you did for training wise.
Well, with having the full-time job and stuff like that, a lot of my training is very early in the morning if it's on a weekday. And then pretty much I had no real family life over the weekend, just due to spending so much time running in the mountains and stuff like that. And it was just a pretty hectic schedule. Like, I would get up at like 4 a.m. on a Saturday morning to be out in Bragg Creek for 6 a.m. To meet some of my training partners, and it was just until about noon, 1 o'clock, I'm running, and then I get back to the car, and then it's drive back, and then pretty much, like, it's still only in the afternoon, but I'm just so exhausted from training that I'm just spending the rest of the day recovering, and
So give our listeners a chance to understand how long you're running for and what your weekly schedule looked like. So you had a long run, you had a shorter run.
It varied, like, week to week. Some weeks you kind of had to pull back to let your body have a bit of a recovery period. But to go into my longest training weeks, we were probably upper around 130 to 140K a week. And then, a short week would have been considered 80K, which, I consider long, but that's... In training for that's considered a short week of not so much training, but
So give me an example of how long one run would be.
On a Saturday morning, just for example, we would go and do a marathon we'd be talking 42 kilometers, and on Tuesday typically I would do about 13 kilometers, and on Thursday I'd do about 15 kilometers.
Okay.
And they were kind of my shorter runs. And then, like, after that long run on a Saturday, I would do, like, a short 4 or 5K run on a Sunday just to kind of shake the lead and, burn up the lactic acid that's kind of pooling in my legs from the day before. So, that's kind of how the training schedule was. And then, of course, the strength training with you in the gym and you know, doing all that, that's kind of a big part in it too. So yeah, it was a pretty hectic schedule.
All right, Noel. So now I wanted to get into some details about the race. Now we'll talk about real just briefly here. I mean, I've talked about this a number of times, but I put you through some extreme workouts in the gym. Now, before you started training this race, how long we trained for? Was it close to a year?
It was just under a year, because I believe we started our strength training probably in October or November of last year.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, it was right up to a month before the race. We were training once or twice a week sometimes.
Yeah. So now I was putting you through some challenging workouts, and you know, we had a good time. We would joke back and forth, but I would push you to the limit, you know, time and time again, and you wouldn't quit, which bugged me a little bit.
Yeah. It's hard to break me.
So I made the workouts a little bit harder, and you still wouldn't quit. So And now you didn't train, you ran, you've been running for a while. How long have you ran?
The first race I ever did was in July of 2012, I believe.
Okay.
And my first race ever was a 10K road race in Calgary. And yeah, it kind of took off from there. I did really well in that first race, and I probably did a race every month after that, and I got hooked. And I was always training towards something, whether it be a 10K or a half marathon or something like that. And yeah, that's kind of where it all began.
You know, what's interesting? Yeah. Sorry to interrupt there. We didn't get into why you started to run. Why don't you share with our listeners your lifestyle a little bit before?
Yes.
And now you're finished this death race. It's crazy.
Yeah, I had a extremely unhealthy lifestyle beforehand. I was the king of processed foods, is what I like to call myself. Literally just like TV dinners, stuff like that. Didn't work out. I was always drained of energy. What made me realize one day was I was working in downtown Calgary, and I was just going up the stairs of a building, in a high-rise building downtown, and I got to the top of the stairs, and I was just like gassed and out of breath. And I'm like, this is not right for me at like 26 years old to be out of energy like this. And I just slowly started running in the mornings before work. We started out doing 2-3 kilometers, kind of advanced to 5, and then advanced to 10, and so on. And then within 6 months, I probably dropped about 35-40 pounds. And I was feeling much better. I was more fresh fruit, more vegetables, getting away from TV dinners and pizzas and all the other good stuff. I mean, it was, I think it's good in moderation, but not the way I was doing it, you know, every meal. So yeah, it was, that's kind of how I got started in all this craziness.
Okay. So you were running for at least 3 years before you decided to start.
Yes. When my first run was in 2012, and then my first marathon was in Calgary in 2013, which would have been around the end of May. So yeah, it wasn't long before I started doing marathons, and then advanced up to a 50K, and then up to the point where I was waiting to do dead race. The longest distance I had ever done was about 67 kilometers. So yeah, it was a big jump.
Only 67. Okay, so I want our listeners to get a chance to experience what it's like to be in this death race. So now you're ready, you're packed up, and walk us up to the start line, as you're a little nervous, I'd imagine. Are you nervous getting up there?
Yes, I was. And during the race, you have to have a support crew. So I had my fiance and one of my good friends from Calgary volunteered to come up and help out. And also a guy I've been working with in Calgary too, that kind of advised me on the whole running side of it and just pacing and whatnot. He was there as well. And he kind of, you know, told me just relax and, you know, just try not to pay attention to all the stuff going on around me, because there was hundreds of people.
Okay, yeah. So take us through the first leg. How did they know? You know what I always kind of wonder? I suppose it's different in each race, but how do you know where you stand when so many people lined up?
Yeah, so you just literally they've got a timing chip that is, in most races it's like a strip that's on your bib, but in this case they had like a timing chip that's actually a ring that goes on your finger. And when you have your gun time, and then you have your chip time. So your gun time is the time that starts from when the gun goes off. And your chip time is at your actual time for when you cross that start line. So even if you're way back at the back, your time does not start until you cross that line.
Okay, so now we're getting into the race. You take us through the first leg. What's that like? Are you feeling good? You're off to the races? It's finally happening?
Yeah, so they kind of have this little bit of a ceremony at the beginning of the race where you actually take off running, but they kind of parade you just around town a little bit, and then you cross the line until you actually get to the trail. And immediately when you get onto the trail, it just goes into broken rock and a climb. And it's a climb for a little bit. Like, leg one is considered the easiest leg. It flattens out. There were some swampy areas where, you know, if you took a wrong step, you were leaving your shoes behind you. Yeah, there was like areas like that along the way. There was probably two really extreme climbs. And it's really crowded on the first leg because everyone's fresh on the first leg and everyone, you know, everyone's taken off together. The herd starts to thin out a bit after, you know, after a few kilometers. So it's kind of, you know, the really, really fast runners that are out there to win it are like right up at the front, and they're just trying to stay ahead of the crowd because they don't want to get, you know, sidetracked trying to weave through people, right? So it's and the first leg, it's challenging. It's 19 kilometers, and it's goes through like the main challenge in that one for me was the swampy terrain. It was, I got through that, came out of the swamp with my shoes still on. And I got to the first transition, and that's kind of, the first leg was kind of uneventful otherwise.
So you get, what happens when you get to your transition? You have your support team there waiting for you?
Yes. At the first transition, my fiance and my friend were there waiting for me with my pack, and literally took the pack, put it on my shoulders as I zipped it up. They were putting sunscreen on me as I was zipping it up. It was kind of like a NASCAR pit stop.
And how long, was this pit stop?
The first one, we tried to keep as short as possible, and there was no sitting allowed on the first one. So the first one, probably I was under 5 minutes, not even. So probably four and a half minutes maybe.
All right, so how long does it take for you to get to that?
To get to the first transition, it was about approximately an hour and 40 minutes for the 19 kilometers.
Hour and 40 minutes? Okay, so you have a quick pit stop, and then what? Now let's take us through the next leg.
So yeah, the next leg, you're kind of running along a railway line. So you're kind of, you can imagine how the terrain is there. It goes along the railway line maybe for 500 meters, and then you start straight into a long climb, probably for about 10 kilometers uphill. It flattened out in little portions, but it was a big, it's kind of like when the race really started to get real for me, because hill climbing is not one of my strong suits. But it went into a 10K climb, then kind of got to another plateau where you could actually drop your pack, because it kind of went up and looped back around to the same point.
Okay.
So it was like the final summit up to Flood Mountain, and yeah, impossible to run. It turned into a hike for about 10 minutes. It was just not runnable.
So steep. So you're actually hiking at this point, not running.
Hiking at this point, pretty much. And I kind of glanced up a few times, and it just looked like a human chain of people along a trail climbing with their hands and their feet.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. So how long does this leg take? This is the second leg we're along. How long does that take?
The second leg in its entirety, for me, took about 4 hours, and it's 27 kilometers. It just has a lot of extreme, like the uphills are bad, but the downhills are even worse. I can remember coming down the downhills, I could just feel my quads were just screaming at me, no more. And it's just, It goes straight up, straight down. There's very little flat. There's a portion of the race that's called Slugfest, and it's in that. It's kind of in that leg. It's on the way back down from the Flood Mountain, and it's you're literally sliding on your backside down along, and you're holding onto branches, trees, twigs, whatever you can get your hands on to not go tumbling down the mountain. So
you're about 5.5 hours in now?
Yeah, well, 5.5 hours in at this point.
So you hit your next transition. What does that look like?
My next transition, it was starting to get hot. So I think the heat was starting to get to me a little bit. And one thing I didn't mention about leg two, if I can just go back to it for a second, was on the way up one of the climbs, my left quad locked up, and I literally all of a sudden could not move my left leg, and I kind of just sat on the mountain, and I was trying to get it moving again, and I couldn't get it moving, and I'm thinking I'm done. And just so happens that a friend of mine was running in the race on a relay team. And he came along and he said, "What's wrong with me?" And I'm like, "Well, I can't move my leg." And he actually gave me a massage by that quad.
On the mountain?
On the side of a mountain, yes.
Crazy. And
long story short, we got it moving again, and I ran with him for a little bit. And it slowed me down because I was afraid of it clearing back up again, so I kind of treaded very carefully after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's speed forward a little bit here so our listeners can get a chance to know what it's like to. I really want to know what it's like mentally. Now, it's at some point it's dark. It's getting dark. It's got to be a little bit cooler. I want to know what it's like to be that exhausted. Mm-hmm. And then in the dark, I mean, you have a headlamp on.
Yeah.
You're in the mountains. In the dark. And you've already been running for how long? You've been running for 10 hours.
During the whole race, I didn't really think much about time. Because I think if I was watching the clock for that amount of time, that it would just have driven me stir crazy. And yeah, I just focus mainly on keeping up with electrolytes, carbs, protein along the way. I mean, during the transitions, it became, like you were saying, as it got into the dark, it got more difficult to, difficult to dissolve food in my stomach too. Like anything I was putting down felt like it was going to come back up. So
now is there any time where you consciously know that your thoughts, or I guess I suggest that your thoughts stop making sense, or you start any kind of hallucination kind of things going on there?
Yeah, I think it was about 85 kilometers. It was just after getting dark, and yeah, I was on a part of the race that's called the Ambler Loop, and I got there, and my mind was starting to play some tricks on me. It was just, my legs, I couldn't really feel them. I'm like thinking to myself, maybe I should give in, you know, maybe I'm not able to do this. And, all I could think about at that point was just my legs, like the pain.
What pushes you forward through at a time like that?
Support. Because actually, as I was running, I managed to get phone signal, and I texted my fiance and I said, yeah, the legs are not doing good. And she texted back. She's like, you know, you've worked too hard to get to this point, so you're going to finish it. And kind of, it was tough love. She kind of just said, you know, you just got to get your butt in gear and just get it done. So I got to the final transition, which was at about 102 kilometers, 103 kilometers approximately. And yeah, she splashed some water on my legs, ice cold water. It kind of made me feel like I had legs again. And we took my shoes off, changed my socks, kind of made me feel a bit fresher. I could see my feet were swelling up big time.
So you had about 3 hours left for your last leg?
My last leg, like just to give you a comparison, like last year I ran the last leg as part of a team and I ran it in 2 hours. And this year, running it solo, I ran it in 4 hours. So definitely fresh. You can tell that my legs were a lot fresher last year. So, yeah.
Okay, so now, do you know, are you saying, like, I have 3 hours to go? I want to know what that's like mentally when you say, to me, I'm like, man, 3 hours? I'm not going to run 3 hours. And you're like, well, I've already ran how many hours already?
Yeah, at that point, I think when I came to that last transition, I was at about 16 hours. And yeah, it was just... I'm thinking to myself, I was well ahead of, there's cutoffs for every leg in the race too, I forgot to mention earlier. So you have to be at a certain point, at a certain transition by a certain time, otherwise you're done. And I was always, despite like my legs killing me, I was always about 2 or 3 hours ahead of the cutoff times. So I wasn't really worrying on that front. But what I was worrying was what I was thinking about. I knew in leg 5, because I'd ran it last year, there was quite a bit of climbing in that too. So the fact that my legs were done and there was more climbing to come, it was not inspiring me with confidence. And I got pushed out of the transition and took off. And yeah, leg 5 also has like a bolt crossing. What I did notice with a lot of other runners that were coming on the bolt, they would not sit down because they were afraid they would never get back up again.
Did you sit down?
I sat down. Probably against my better judgment, but I just felt, well, the opportunity to sit for a few minutes is too good to turn down. So I sat and I managed to get standing again. I climbed out of the boat like I was 120 years old. But I got out of the boat and got running again and chipped back in, and my time started again. And it was straight into a steep uphill climb after the boat. And yeah, my legs were, at this point, I was still in a very, very dark spot in my head. And I was... like, you know, there's no, I knew at this point there was no quitting, but I'm like, am I going to crawl across that finish line or am I going to run across it?
So take us to the finish line. You know you're getting close. Is there lights? Is there, what's going
on? Yeah, so when you come back into town, you can see lights for about maybe 6 kilometers. And actually, probably for the last few kilometers, I I got into a bit of a sprint, and I kind of overtook a lot of guys along the way, and I kind of gave some words of encouragement along the way too, kind of just reminding everyone that, you know, we're nearly there. And yeah, I haven't really ever shared this with anyone, actually, not even my fiance, but I was actually kind of, just as I was coming back into town before I met anyone, I was kind of tearing up a little bit, and I was just kind of getting overcome with emotion. And it's totally out of character for me, but I just knew how monumental what I'd done was. And I'm like, well, by the time I get to finish line, I got to stop. And
pull yourself together.
Pull myself together, yeah. I just didn't want to be a broken mess. And yeah, the last kilometer that I ran to the finish line actually was one of my fastest kilometers in the whole race.
So what is the next day? We're going to wrap this up here, but I want to know what the next day looks like. You know, what kind of condition are you in? Now, I heard you told me you didn't lose any toenails, but I mean, for running that long, there's all kinds of crazy things that happen to people. What are you going through there?
Yeah, for me, I was pretty fortunate, actually, because I've heard of lots of people losing, like I heard people are losing 3 toenails, 4 toenails, just from the downhill and the uphill. The biggest issue for me, I had no blisters, which is something I thought I might have, but the biggest issue for me was swelling, just from the elevation change from going up and down those mountains. The biggest issue was that, pretty much. And other than that, the day after was just a very slow moving day. I got to bed probably at 5 a.m. went for a shower, like before I went to bed. It was like the slowest shower I ever had, just because I couldn't move very fast. And then when I did finally get to bed, I still woke up the morning after at 8 a.m. like bright-eyed, but I could not get back to sleep, so I went about my business all day. And then in the afternoon, probably about 4 or 5 o'clock, I climbed into my trailer. I just told everyone I'm going for a half hour nap, and 13 hours later I woke up.
Tell me what kind of pain. Do you tell, give our listeners a chance to, there's got to be some kind of, could you walk, could you sit down?
I could walk slowly. It's recovery's been pretty good, and I'm actually planning on my next venture pretty soon. So
you are a maniac. Noel, I want to let you get going. We've been on here for quite some time. I just want to thank you for everything. Like, you've been such an inspiration for me to be able to train you and push you and work with you, and to follow you along this little journey. It's inspired so many people. I know people that have started there. I know someone, one of my clients, they're going to do part of the death race. Another one signed up for a triathlon, and it's because of you. It's because of the things that you've done and just the inspiration you shared. And I want to thank you personally for bringing me along with you and for doing what you do.
No, thank you, Drew. And like I said, the regime you put me through, don't think I would have finished this race without all that hard work on your part too. So I do appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Noel.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for this edition of Transformations Through Running. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks to Noel for sharing his story with us. We so much appreciate you coming on and tuning into our show week in and week out. We are wrapping up season 3. My gosh, it's going by quick. So we'll let you know what's coming up here in the near future. We have more guests planned. We have more inspiring stories to share with you. Make sure you follow us on Instagram.com/DrewTaddeus so you know who's coming out. Maybe if you missed the show, if you subscribe to our show or follow. For example, you could subscribe on iTunes, but then you only follow on Spotify, for example. We have different platforms, but we could be listening on terrestrial radio, possibly. You could be listening on our website, trueformlife.com, but you can also subscribe so you're notified when a new show comes out. So if you're not subscribed, follow us for sure, because sometimes we do giveaways on social media. We let you know what shows have gone up in the past, and sometimes what shows are coming up in the future as well. And then you can find us at facebook.com/trueformlife. We put up content there on a daily basis, nutrition, fitness, lifestyle, to get you going in the right direction, continually reminding you with positive reminders, because I think that's important. I think that's important for all of us to continue to be positive at this time, continue to look for inspiration and be surrounded by that positivity. So trueformlife.com is our main website. This is where we do our meal planning, recipes, grocery shopping lists, at-home workouts. We talk about increasing your energy and improving digestion. We do a lot of different things to help heal your body and recover so you're at your optimal That's pretty much all we have for you. Once again, thank you so much for being here, and we hope to catch you on the next show.